Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah, Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come first tonight in
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
It's Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope one of those cowboy guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black D. House.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Morris. Tonight, I'd like to welcome my special guest to the show, Deshaun Pratt, formerly known as Amasis. What's going on, man?
What's going on, Jay? How are we feeling tonight, man?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Man, I can't call it. Life is good, brother.
All right. I've wanted to have you on for a while. I don't know why I never got around to it, but I had your
former
partner on.
It's been a long time coming, man.
Yeah. Had your former partner on years and years ago, and so here we are. How did you all get started in wrestling? What inspired you to be a wrestler?
I mean, you know, the one thing, you know, that really inspired, it's funny, I always like to tell this story. I kind of came across pro wrestling by accident, believe it or not. So, you know, I'm 4 years old, four-year-old Deshaun living in Camden. You know, usually on Saturday mornings, you're watching your cartoons and you're going out to see, hang out with my best friend up the corner, up the street. But he wasn't home at the time. So Saturday morning cartoons is over, 12 o'clock comes on, and there's WWF Superstars. So at the time, I'm like, wait, what is this? What am I watching, and why is this so cool? So all I'm seeing is, you know, the intro, and all I'm seeing is just the larger-than-life characters, man. I'm seeing, you know, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, you know, Bret Hart, and I'm like, whoa, this is cool. This is cool. Sat down and watched it, and you know, I was hooked. Tuned in every Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, excuse me, for years until it got canceled. And yeah, I mean, it was just something I've always wanted to do. I felt like it was at that moment, you know, when I discovered professional wrestling on TV on that Saturday, that I knew that's what I wanted to do in my life.
Wow. What were the guys that you were drawn to? Obviously, you know, you continued to watch wrestling. What were the guys that kept you interested and you were really drawn to?
Well, I mean, like, then, growing up, I mean, it was definitely the Rockers, man. That was, like, my favorite tag team, like, ever, you know, just, like, watching. Mm-hmm. It was, I feel like it was, like, the, you know, the colorful colors, the high-flying moves, and just the charisma that really drew me to them. And, you know, as time progressed on, you know, guys like, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin kept me engaged, you know, The Rock, Triple H, Degeneration X, Edge and Christian, and even then, going back to, you know, the Monday Night Wars, I love seeing the meme, you know, how, like, they always say, like, kids nowadays don't know the struggle of flipping back and forth between channels.
Yeah.
And I remember around that time, like, it was always, like, right on the money, like, 9 o'clock. That's when WCW Nitro would have the luchadors on. So when that 9 o'clock hour would come on, I'm watching, you know, Rey Mysterio, Psychosis, Super Calo, you know, all those guys just doing their thing. And that's what really, really, at that time, I was really into, like, you know, the cruiserweights and the luchadors around that time.
Yeah. Did you have an athletic background already, you know, previous to wrestling?
I did. I was an amateur wrestler through high school, middle school and high school.
Okay. Did that help a lot when you transitioned into training?
You know what? Yes and no, actually. I guess in a sense, whereas, like, it built up my toughness for it, and it gave me that coachability going into the Wrestle Factory and, you know, starting my career with them. So, but of course, you know, even in, I guess in a sense too, like, even just like in just regular grappling, because there were days that we would just have like shoot wrestling days, and you know, kind of just wipe the mat with people. Except, you know, Gulak. Whenever I locked up with him, man, Eddie was tough. You know, he was like my arch nemesis when we would have shoot wrestling days.
Now, were you a fan of the indies? How did you end up landing on Chikara?
Well, so, I mean, yeah. I mean, I was always a big fan of, you know, the indies. And I was a big fan of ECW, watching that, and, you know, in the Northeast area, until that, you know, got canceled. So one night, I'm sitting at home. I was actually telling a buddy of mine this exact same story a couple of days ago. So the one night, I'm just like, man, like, fuck, I wish, you know, wrestling was on TV still, man. What is going on? I wish wrestling was still on Friday nights. So I'm flipping through, you know, channel WGTW, channel 19, and I see wrestling on. And I'm like, whoa, what is this? What am I watching? And it was CZW.
Ah.
So I'm like, whoa, what is this? And the first person that I saw was Ruckus.
Okay.
On there. And I'm just like, wow. And, you know, and at the time, you know, Ruckus was, you know, at times before, you know, he lost the weight, got in really awesome shape. But I'm like, yo, this dude is, like, you know, heavy, but look how he's moving. Like, that's what drew me in. And then every week I would just tune in. And then there was a point in time when, you know, that fell off TV. So I'm like, dang, man, that's off TV now. And then my buddy was like, yo, you guys want to go to CZW? And I'm like, wait, they're still around? And he's like, yeah, they're down at the arena. I'm like, bro, I was watching them when they were on Channel 19. And he was like, yeah, you know, let's go. So we went ahead, ran over the bridge, got out, you know, got in line, got our tickets, and, you know, Ruckus was on the card. So I was like, of course, you know, I'm going to go. And then, you know, at the time, I only knew Ruckus, but then that's when, you know, I got acquainted with the whole Blackout stable. You know, Eddie Kingston, you know, Sabian, you know, like he's, and the Joker, and Robbie Moreno, and I'm like, wait, wow, okay, cool. So I never seen any of these other dudes, but, like, I really, really like these guys, and I got drawn to them. And then, you know, seeing guys like Christian Monroe, Claudio Castagnoli, El Generico, love, you know, the Canadian guys that would come down. Seeing Nate Hatred, Justice Payne, you know, Nick Gage, and just like, Sanjay Dutt, like, watching all those guys. Yeah. So, like, I was there month in and month out until I was just like, you know what, yeah, it's time for me to, you know, get my money together and start training.
Sure.
You know, I got the itch.
Now, you know, being such a big CZW fan, what kept you from training there and landed you in the Chikara Wrestle Factory?
You know what it was? I really liked the Lucha Libre, you know, curriculum that they were teaching. You know, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was honestly something that, for me, that it was a confidence booster, man. Like, just to be able to do the stuff that, you know, Mike and Hiro were teaching us at the time, you know, it was just like, man, like, I really dig this. And, like, I just stuck with it. You know, it just seemed like, you know, it was my, you know, it was the place for me to be at, you know, at the time, you know? So, and I just stuck with it.
Sure. What was your thoughts on Quack as a trainer? Because, I mean, he's got a lot of criticism and this and that, but obviously he knows what he's doing.
100%. I mean, like, it's one of those things, like, he does, in fact, have one of the best minds, you know, in professional wrestling. You know, I've traveled up and down the road with him, and you know, he's taken, you know, me, you know, sitting in on the road, and we would just pick his brain. We would just sit at a diner after shows and just pick his brain and, you know, listen to some of the stories that he would tell. And it was just like, wow, okay. And so it was always like taking those little nuances that he would, you know, instill in us and perfect them and kind of basically make it our own and kind of use it to our own, to our act, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, you know, in hindsight, did us very well at the time. So, but yeah, I mean, like working under, you know, training under him and Hiro and, you know, even, you know, Claudio it was some of the best training I've ever received. And, you know, I got the opportunity, as I grew with the company, I started, you know, going other places, you know, of course, you know, with his blessing, you know, to just, again, roll around with other people, and get the opportunity to get, you know, go roll around with Delirious and, you know, the other guys at Ring of Honor for a little bit, you know, even going down, you know, CZW too, rolling around with Google,
right.
You know, and, you know, learning a little bit from DJ, you know, so like, it was cool because, you know, having all of that in the Northeast was, you know, just hitting, you know, all three of the top, you know, wrestling schools at the time was just like, was awesome for us. So taking full advantage of it.
What would you say is the big difference between Quack's training and, you know, some of the other trainings? Because I know, you know, he definitely specializes in the luchador training. He doesn't really have the reputation as a hard-hitting guy, where, you know, some other schools might be labeled more of a strong style base type thing. But what would you say is the big difference in his training?
It's one of those things for him. It's just like he's all about the technique. You know, incorporating that, whether it's, you know, hitting the ropes a certain way or, you know, having your foot placement, you know, one way or, you know, slapping a move on this way, especially with the British style that he also incorporates into the training, which is really cool. It's a very, very well-rounded school. So, like, one day, it was great. And at the time, too, again, when we had Hiro around, you know, Hiro would teach us a lot of the British style, and you know, Mike would teach us a lot of the lucha. So, like on Tuesday classes, he was teaching us, you know, just amazing, just lucha libre inspired, you know, movesets, and just, you know, whereas we would get the you know, the chain wrestling from Hiro, and then even then too, like Claudio would, you know, offer his 2 cents, and you know, he was like, you know, like one of the best wrestlers out there today. So, I mean, it was just a triple threat of just amazing professional wrestling. So,
right. Now, how did your gimmick come about? The Osirian Portal. How did you end up, you know, being part of a tag team? Was that your goal or aim to begin with, to be a tag team wrestler?
I mean, you know what? I not really, but it fit and it stuck. You know, it was just one of those, they were, you know, Ophidian and I got in the ring together and, you know, he just saw us together. And, you know, it's common knowledge around the time, too, that, you know, Ophidian and I grew up together. So it was just, you know, we already had that synergy just from growing up together. So why not? So, and it was just like, I remember the story that, like, from what I was told that, like, you know, Mike was like, man, I've always wanted to do a family gimmick with somebody, but there was just never a person that walked in that fit the character, like body-wise and just, you know, everything until, like, I guess I walked in and he was just like, there's my Pharaoh. That's who I, that's it. And it just literally just became, you know, okay, Pharaoh, you know, Serpent, okay, you know, Cobra, excuse me, like, so what are we going to do? And, you know, he and I were leaving practice, and I'm like, dude, like, why don't we just, you know, obviously, you know, run with this Egyptian thing, and I'm like, let's think of a name, and we came up with the Osirian Portal, and we pitched it to Mike, and he liked it. He was like, okay, I like that name.
Yeah.
The rest is history, as the saying goes.
Yeah, now, I mean, being it, you know, as Quackenbush's actual idea, and he you know, he kind of had a thought for that, was it hard to really lock in and commit to that and just go all in it?
Not at all. I mean, I was just happy to be ready to debut, to be honest. You know, that was literally it. You know, you hit, you know, you train hard, you hit that, you know, you go to classes every day with the hopes of, you know, debuting and getting the character. You know, of course, everybody goes in, one that, you know, goes into a school, and it's funny because he even said it himself with the stories. He's just like, you know, he's like, you know, when you're thinking about becoming a pro wrestler, you already have the theme music picked out, which I did. You already have your name picked out. You already have the movesets you're going to do. So, like, it was kind of just like a complete 180 as to what I was, like, originally thinking of doing. But, you know, it was just like, you know what? Wrestling is all about adaptability. You know, if you can't adapt to anything, I mean, it's just like, you know, working for him, you know, it's no different than working for the big company in Stanford. They give you a character, you run with it. You know what I mean? So why, I'm figuring, why not get that that opportunity to hone that adaptability now, you know, versus trying to do that later on, you know, for when and if I ever, you know, get the call to go up there, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Now, how did it, you know, come about where your style and your moveset, how did you, you know, come up with that? Was that another, you know, kind of Quackenbush, you know, influenced?
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, the influence on the, you know, the lucha aspect. But I, for me, I was always really big into the Dragon Gate. I was always really big into Dragon Gate. Something like that, hard hitting, fast paced, high octane spots, just intricate, you know, bang, bang, bang. So I, you know, kind of adapted that. So that's where I did a lot of my studies. So I would be sitting and watching, you know, after training, I'd be sitting over my laptop until, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning watching, you know, Dragon Gate videos, watching Dragon Gate DVDs, and then finding all of these Dragon Gate DVDs and just buying them and really watching them, whereas Ophidian was more of the submission-based. So he honed that. He was just like, you know what, I feel like I should be more of the submission base, you more of the fast, high flyer, you know, semi powerhouse, so to speak. And I'm, and it just gelled so well together. And it was just, it was, like you said, it was just a complete center, 100%.
Yeah. Now, it didn't take you guys long to wind up, you know, heading overseas. You hit Japan, Germany. What were those experiences like, especially so young in your career?
Scary. Definitely scary, you know, because, and the thing is, you know, it's one of those things that when, especially for trainers, you know, and, you know, that's been around for so long. It was so almost like, apparently, according to Mike, you know, he was telling us, like, it was almost unheard of for two young students to kind of thrive as fast as we did. So, and, I mean, it was just one of those, like, okay, let's actually see if you guys are that talented, or is this just happens, or is this just a fluke, excuse me. So, you know, getting the opportunity to do that, go over to Germany, it was amazing. And then getting the call to go to Japan, that was just a whole other level. I mean, getting to wrestle in Carrington Hall, I mean, not many of us in the business can say we've done that, you know?
Right.
And to be able to be blessed with the opportunity to have that opportunity at such a young age, like, it still sticks with me. And, like, I still get goosebumps from thinking that, about that, and just having, like, you know, it was just funny. Like, one of my favorite stories to tell people about when we went over there. So, you know, our first match was against a young boy, but at the time, he was a young boy, but that just recently got out of the young boy phase of the black trunks, black boots. You're only allowed to do three moves. So, it was Shota Takanishi, and his partner was Minoru Sawa. So, which was really cool. And so, you know, we go over the deal, and I'm ready. I'm like, yo, I'm ready to do this. Let's go. You know, the red light, I remember reading Chris Jericho's book. He calls it the red light syndrome. Like, when he's out there and he's being recorded and that red light's on, you're on 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, you know, I'm ready to go, man. Okay, I'm ready to go. Music hits, right? And I go out there. We go out there. And I just see every butt in every seat in Carter Hall. And that thing, and I'm thinking to myself, like, whoa, this place is bigger than it looks on DVD.
Hmm.
You know? And yeah. I'm seeing the, I'm like, you know, and I'm just like, whoa. So we're getting ready to make our entrance, and I just remember tapping Ophidian on the shoulder, and he didn't really realize I was trying to get his attention, so I grabbed him by the shoulder, and he's like, yo, what's up? And I go, I just forgot everything. And literally, like, I just got nervous. And he's just like, nah, man, you got this. Like, you got this. I'm like, all right, cool. So, whatever, we're doing the deal. And, like, as the time progressed on, when I really just sat there, and I was like, all right, man, you're here. You know, the eyes are watching you. The office is watching you. Don't screw this up. And, like, once I calmed myself down, I was like, okay, I got it. Red light, you know, the red light syndrome is on. Let's go. And we ended up having a really good match with them, and which was cool that we walked to the back and we were welcomed by a standing ovation by the office and everyone on the roster, which was a really, really cool, like, blessed moment. So
Yeah, that's great. In 2008, you guys wrestled Steen Errico in Ring of Honor.
yes.
Yeah. What do you think prevented you from going back there? I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys had you know, made your rounds. You hit Japan. You did all these other things. And, yeah, you had a matchup against them, and seemingly that was that for a while.
I mean, I guess it was just the timing of everything, you know. At the time, it wasn't like we weren't liked. It wasn't like we didn't connect with their fan base. From what I was like, Gabe was really high on us at the time. So, like, I remember, you know, we spoke to him, you know, pulled him to the side, we thanked him for the opportunity. And he was just like, yeah, you know, here we go. This is like, you know, the fans like you, I like you, you know, Steen, Generico, like, working with you guys, like, you know, I feel like, you know, you guys can do a lot. So he's like, here's what I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to give you a bunch of dates from FIP, go down there, go hang out, you know, go do a thing, and then, you know, I'm going to give you a bunch of Ring of Honor dates. Cool, no problem. Like, we were in there. Like, we were just two giddy schoolgirls, like, yo, this is it. This is what we've been busting our butts for. Since day one, like, we're here, and, you know, we got the phone call that, you know, there was a change in management, and I'm just like, okay, so, like, what does that mean for us? Like, I'm still in there or not? And he was just like, I don't think so.
Wow.
And I'm just like, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, it sucked, but, like, it was one of those things you kind of just like, well, it was fun while it lasted. We got a really cool opportunity out of it. Hey, if anything, you know, comes of it, cool. If nothing doesn't come from it, cool. We just got to keep moving. You know what I mean? So, and that's essentially what we did. Like, we didn't get upset about it. We didn't get bitter about it. We were just like, okay, well, you know, we just got to keep working hard and keep doing what we're doing, you know, so. That was pretty much how that went.
How did it come about where, obviously, you were a long-term CZW fan. You knew about their product for quite some time. You trained under, you know, Quack and Chikara. Zandig was definitely not a fan of Quack. At some point, Chikara guys were able to be brought in. How did it come about that you wound up in CZW? And, you know, how did that go, at least on entry?
Well, I mean, the first time in a long while a Chikara act being on CZW was during a tag team tournament for the vacated tag team titles.
Right.
So, you know, it took some doing. You know, it took some urging, it took some pushing, it took some, you know, some talking. And so, you know, eventually, like, he was, you know, things were like, okay, you know what, go ahead, go do it, you know. Go do it. Okay, cool. It was great. And, you know, we felt as though it was another opportunity for us to tap into another market and tap into another fan base. And, you know, so it was really cool because, like, when we were announced for that tournament, like, that blew up, you know, on, you know, the internet world at the time. You know, they were like, wait, what? And people were just like, wait a second. I thought there was, you know, heat between blah, 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 blah. And what happened? I go, well, look, evidently not, because here we are.
Right.
And I said to them, you know, I was telling people, they were like, what happened? Like, you know, again, fans coming up to us, like, how did this happen? I go, look, don't worry about how it happened. Just know we're here. Just be happy at the fact we're here. And we're going to entertain you guys just like how we do with the fan base at Chikara. And entertain we did. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we got a viral video out of the deal. So,
absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, so it was good. It was a good time and beneficial for all.
Yeah,
so,
and that was my next question.
Moment.
Next question was the viral video. Take me through that a little bit and how that all, you know, the planning came about. And, I mean, what it was like. I mean, you guys hit ESPN. You hit just about every avenue you could possibly hit.
So, the idea behind that, you know, it was just one of those, like, we knew that, okay, this is the Night of Infamy show. This is the show before Cage of Death. The big, you know, this is literally, like, the big show before the biggest showcase. The showcase of Ultra Violent, if you will. All right, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, we were like, yo, we got to do something that has not been seen or not been done in this tournament at all. We got to do something. We got to come out the gate. We literally got to blow the doors off of this. And I was just like, yo, what if we do this? What if we actually do this? And the more we talked about it, the more ridiculous it got. And it was awesome. Like, there was no stopping. We just started throwing ideas, and we were just like, yeah, we're going to keep doing that. Yeah, you know, let's do that. Yeah, what if we did this instead of that here? And we brought the idea to Joe and Ryan Slater, and they were all on board. They were all about it. And then they were throwing their, you know, ideas into the mix, and it just became the most ridiculous thing ever. And so to the show, and, you know, I pulled to the side. I was like, yo, what if we got the locker room involved, dude? Like, there's a, you know, like, and they were just like, yo, let's do that. And then, you know, so, you know, we went up there and like, hey, man, you guys want to, you know, partake in this? It'd be really cool. If not, you know, cool, you know, but if you want to, hey, we'd love to have you out there. And, yeah, you know, it was great. I mean, you know, I guess when Shen's closing, and it was great, you know, and everyone, it was just a good time, man, and it was just literally the most ridiculous thing ever, and that's what we wanted it to be, you know, that's what we wanted it to be. And I just remember, you know, DJ coming down from Gorilla, just with this smile on his face, shaking his head, and goes, you know, that was funny. And we go in the back, and Gage was like, yo, that's what fuck I'm talking about. That's how you get a crowd involved. And we're like, whoa, we're getting props from, like, the OG. Like, this is dope, man. Like,
yeah.
So it was really cool, man. It was actually, like I said, it was one of those things that, you know, that was, it was beneficial for everybody involved. You know what I mean? And it was a fun time, man. It was a really fun time.
Yeah. And how was the aftermath of that, as, you know, seeing yourself pop up on, you know, all these different outlets that don't even really cover wrestling for the most part? It just became like, what is this? And, you know, it'd be on Tosh or it'd be on ESPN.
Right. So the first place I saw it was on a channel called G4. At the time, it was a video game channel. So everything video game. So the show called Attack of the Show. And every Friday, they do their top 5 viral videos. So I'm watching it, And they're like, oh, okay, our number one. So they're going over everything, and then it's about to be a commercial break. And they're like, hey, our number one video involves pro wrestling and hypnosis. And I just go, wait a minute. No way. Absolutely not. No way. Like, I'm just sitting there, just like, now I'm sitting on the edge of my bed, like, walking. The show comes back on. They're talking about it. And boom. There's the four of us on G4 TV.
Yeah.
And I literally rush to the phone, call Vinny, like, dude, like, yo, we were just on G4 TV. He's like, wait, what? Are you serious? I'm like, yo, they just played our video on G4 TV. Like, and we're thinking, like, this was it. We're literally thinking, like, okay, got a little bit of buzz on that. That was it. The next morning, our Facebook is blown up. Apparently, we were on the front page of AOL.com. You know, ESPN was running it, and, like, George Lopez was running it. We're just literally like, dude, like, this is crazy. Like, yo, this is crazy. Like, what the heck, man? And he's just like, I know. Like, our promoters are hitting us up. Like, yo, we want to bring you guys down here. We want to bring you guys down here. And it was just like, dude, it just is like gangbusters for us, man. And, you know, and they were like, yo, you know, we want to, you know, can you guys bring the other two dudes and do that? Our show. And we're like, yeah, you know. And we were like, yo, if we turn this into a freaking, you know, taking this act on the road, I'm good with this.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, like, it was just great. I mean, you know, like, Joe and Ryan got that, you know, got their dabs from it. You know, we got our dabs from it. Like I said, you know, I keep saying it, but it was something that was really cool, and it was great to be able to help out other people by doing something so cool. You know what I mean? And mostly to help out another company and help out, you know, like, it was great to be able, like I said, it was just really super beneficial, man. Really super beneficial.
Now, you know, coming off of that, obviously you're getting a lot of attention. People are calling you, hey, can you come do this here? Can you come do this there? But, I mean, you had, like, another CZW match, and then we're pretty much gone for a couple of years. So, I mean, what leads that to happening? Because if one place doesn't want to capitalize on it, you would think it's the place that hosted it to begin with.
For sure. I mean, but, you know, just different ideas were thrown around at the time. I mean, you know, we won the match. We went on the Cage of Death to wrestle up those most wonderful tag titles. Which, you know, to this day is still awesome for me to be able to say that I wrestled on the Cage of Death at the arena. Like, which is awesome. You know, but it was just one of those things that, you know, I feel like, you know, we ran our course there. We did what we needed to do. You know, and that's just how the business is, you know. You bring in an act to kind of, in a sense, enhance what, you know, it's being put in front of you, you know, which was enhancing, you know, the prestige of the CCW Tag Team Championships. And I felt like we did our job, you know, and it wasn't for a lack of, like, all right, guys, thanks, that was it. You know, it was just literally like, hey, you know, all right, cool. Like, we knew this was what we were doing. We already knew that from the gate. You know, and it was just like, if there's something else that, like, you know, we'll have for you, you know, we'll call you.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about professional wrestling, you know, it's a constant, you know, it's a constant ball rolling, man. It's snowball, you know, constant snowball. Like, you know, changes happen, you know? So it was just one of those things that changes happen. And, you know, yeah, so we weren't back in CZW for a while until maybe, man, when was that?
It was a couple of years.
Yeah. It was maybe like a good 3 years before we actually came back to CZW to see with the blackout for a bit, which was fun. Which was a lot of fun. So, you know, and it was actually really cool too, because the fans were just as excited then as they were before, you know, to see us come back, you know. And again, you know, the idea, you know, in my mindset is just like, yeah, let's hopefully try to bridge that gap. You know what I mean? Like, bridge that gap. Because, again, when I remember when I was going, you know, the Chikara guys were on CZW. you know, like, you know, Kid the Kitchell, you know, Halloween, Shane Storm was there. Quack himself. I remember the first time I ever really seen, like, the other Chikara guys. You even knew what Chikara was, because I knew who Quack was, you know, because he was wrestling the CZW. You know, he won Best of Best, you know, CZW Junior Heavyweight Champion, so on and so forth. You know, when they opened Cage of Death 7 for that trios match, and I was like, yo, this is dope. You know, these guys are flying all over the place. These guys are doing moves that I never thought deemed possible. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was just like, man, you know, in a sense, kind of like hoping, you know, that, like, again, we can bridge that gap again. But, you know, it was just wrestling changes. You know, wrestling has its own niches, I guess. That's what I guess I'm trying to get to. So, you know, but, like, and again, you know, it was still fun. You know, it was fun for us to be there. And again, kind of, you know, add prestige to the tag division again, you know, especially wrestling, you know, some, you know, the veterans of Ruckus, you know, and Black Heat, you know.
Yeah.
Multiple time tag team champ. He's been around CZW for years, you know, and it was just cool to be able to say, like, man, I'm getting in the ring with dudes I watched before I paid my money to go to school. So it was actually a really cool moment for me in that aspect, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. In 2012, Chikara went on hiatus, kind of left everybody, you know, with question marks. What was that like for you? And, you know, how did you handle the whole situation? Because it kind of put you with no home at the time.
I had an amazing vacation. Let's just put it to you like that. I got the chance to rest. I mean, it was great. It was awesome. I mean, sure, you know, P and I, you know, did some you know, outside bookings, but dude, I got some rest. That was it. It was just like, man, you know what? You know, a lot of people were upset about it, but I'm like, nah, man. I want to rest, man. I'm hurting. I'm sore. You know, I want to be able to, like, you know, spend time with some of my family. I was always traveling. You know, get to do some things that I, you know, again, spend some time with the family. You know, see people, see family I haven't seen in a bit. So it was cool, man. It was, I probably was like one of the few people that wasn't mad at it. Like, it was an awesome vacation for me, 100%.
Did it, was it discouraging at all, though? Did you, you know, wonder about, like, what's next? You know, when does, you know, things pick back up? Where do you go? Like,
I mean, sure. Yeah, in the beginning, you always, you know, have that, like, that fear, like, man, like, what do we do? What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Vinny and I had that talk. I go, so I'm like, yo, what's next? What are we doing? He was just like, dude, we just keep doing what we're doing. You know, we go out, keep getting these bookings, keep traveling, and keep doing what we're doing. And that's exactly what we did. I remember around that time, we spent a lot of time in the Midwest, going back and forth out there a lot. And even just hitting, you know, some of the local shows in Jersey, you know. So the idea is that way the act was still in people's faces. You know, we didn't allow people to forget it. What it was or is at the time, you know. So we just did our part and just like, yo, let's just keep doing what we're doing, and you know, whatever happens, happens. That was literally it. So,
yeah. Overall, wrestling under a mask. I'd imagine it has its pluses and minuses, but you know, you really don't get you know, that face recognition out in public, but maybe that's good if you're trying to be anonymous. What was your thoughts 100%. On it overall?
So in the beginning, I was just like, really? Like, what? But again, adaptability, that key word, and, you know, that's very useful in this, you know, sport business of professional wrestling, adaptability. So I was just like, really? Like, oh, man. You know, so like, I had the opportunity, so when I got the mask made, you know, Mike was just like, yeah, you know, as a rule of thumb, as a good practice, you know, train in it just to get used to it. So I would go through a full almost three-hour practice wearing it. And, you know, it was just like, I hated it. I had the peripheral vision. You know, luckily it was an open mouth mask so I can actually breathe. But I grew to love it because of the success, of the successes that it brought us. You know, so it was just one of those things, like, don't, you know, you don't hate on it, don't condemn the things that doing you good business. So, you know, I grew to love it. I grew to love it.
Yeah.
It was hard, but like I said, I grew to love it.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult. As far as Chikara, they really seem to lean towards living the gimmick. Back when I first started the show, it was probably within the first 2 years of me doing the show, I had Ophidian on, and it was, I mean, I was just interviewing a snake from Egypt. There was no talking to an actual person. There was a very living the gimmick type of thing, which I didn't expect. But, you know, how was it to go that far with your gimmick, to have to really like live it through? Yeah,
it was fun. It was fun. It was great, you know. Even to the point of just people that would interact with us, you know, like, wait, how are you, you know, using a computer? And it was like, hey, we're time travelers. We can do whatever the hell we want, you know. It was fun, man, and which was even really cool because it was fun for the fan base. You know, it was fun for them because, again, it was just like they got that interaction. You know, it's just like, again, interacting with, you know, your favorite, you know, movie character or your favorite comic book character or favorite video game character come to life. And, you know, that's essentially what it was, you know. And it was like a lot of people like that. It was fun for them, you know, and it was fun for us. So,
yeah. King of Trios 2015, it was the Bullet Club, and what was your memories of that, and you know, working those guys?
That was just a moment in time in my career that I just was not expecting. When it was literally that, you know, hey, literally, you get the email from boss man, yo, this is what you're doing. And literally, he was like, get your butts to practice now. And got our butts to practice is what we did. Like, AOT wasn't for like 4 months. We were practicing dead, like now. Like, not now, but right now. And so, like, I think we were in practice like that Tuesday, that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Just honing that craft, you know, and just really just making sure everything was in tip-top perfection, you know, because, again, like, those three, you know, I mean, heck, even still, those two, Nick and Matt, like, they are the epitome of perfection in professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, you watch what they do. It's so precise all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was just like we knew we had our work cut out for us, and we knew that if we didn't come correct, like, we were going to embarrass ourselves on our biggest stage ever against three of the best, you know, wrestlers in the world at the time, you know what I mean? And we couldn't let it go down that way. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it must have been pretty surreal, you know, working those guys. Chikara brought in a lot of people over the years, you know, from, you know, former WWE names and, you know, different characters, you know, that they brought in for their trios and their this and their that. What were some of the other, like, really surreal moments or guys to even just share the locker room with?
Oh, man, I mean, Demolition was cool. Like, again, watching those guys, you know, One Man Gang when they came in. Too Cold Scorpio, again, big ECW fan, and just, you know, watching him come in. Tommy Dreamer, another one, like, he was my guy, you know, watching ECW. Even just some of the international talent, like, you know, some of the Joshis that came over, because, like, you know, it was really cool because, like, the Joshis, like, they go hard, man, and I respect everything that they do. One of the things I've always said to a lot of people, I go, man, you know, you got to respect the Joshis, man, because sometimes they go hard just as the dudes, if not harder sometimes. You know what I mean? Because you can tell that they got something to prove. And it was fun, man. It was fun. I'm trying to think. Glacier was another cool one. D'Lo Brown, which was cool. who actually was funny that one KOT when he was there, you know, walked up to me and Ophidian was just like, yo, I'm a fan of the portal. And we just looked at each other like, what? Like, wait, really? Like, you know, like, you watch our stuff? Like, so that was actually really cool. Man, there's just like so many to remember. Yeah, I mean, those are the main big ones for me personally that comes off the top of the head.
Yeah. Overall, obviously, you've been, you know, quite a part of it. You know, part of your career is comedy wrestling, you know, with the different hypnosis and this and that. There's some people that are, you know, fans of it, some people that aren't. There's the different things that Joey Ryan has done. And what's your thoughts overall on comedy wrestling and the different flavors of wrestling and people's reaction to it?
You pretty much said it, Jay. It's flavors. Some people like chocolate ice cream. Some people hate it. Some people like vanilla ice cream. Some people hate it. Some people like strawberry. Some people hate it. I feel like with professional wrestling, and especially nowadays, it literally gives something for everybody. I know people that can't stand deathmatch wrestling. I know a lot of people that love it. I know people that can't stand, you know, comedy wrestling. I know people that love it. I mean, I knew at a point in time that we were getting flack from a lot of people because of it. I remember specifically right after, again, to circle back to the video, that we, one morning, got an angry, very, very angry and malicious message from a worker down south. And, like, it was just like, you guys are an abomination to business, and you guys need to stop doing this hypnosis stuff. It's killing what we're doing, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, bro, like, why are you, like, up early? Like, dude, like, you sent this message at 7 a.m. Like, are you angry first thing in the morning right now? Like, you literally woke up mad. Like, if I can steal a Cat Williams, you know, term, but, you know, or quote, like, you gangbanging over eggs right now, bro. Like, why are you mad right now? Like, you literally in our inbox, like, playing it early in the morning. Like, I just woke up to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, yo, you see this dude? Like, you know, like, and it's one of those things that's like, you know, sure, you know, obviously, you know, he's been around, you know, he's a quote-unquote vet. So, you know, all right, cool, man. I respect the opinion. But, again, if it's not, if you don't like it, then it's clearly not for you. That's essentially what we said to him. You know, but we're not going to stop doing what we're doing because you don't like it. You know, you're just one person. We have, clearly have millions of people that like what we do. You know? And that's the same thing, you know, like I see, you know, Joey Ryan getting flagged for doing the, you know, the dick spots. Like, yo, if he's getting the dude booked and he's making bank off of it, why not? Why not? You know what I mean? Why not? You know, if, you know, you got dudes out there that's making their money in their business off of, you know, going through panes of glass, why not?
Right.
If you got, you know, dudes hitting, you know, 20 Canadian destroyers in a match, but they're getting the notoriety and they're getting booked, why not?
Right.
You know, that's the way, that's just me, you know, and I see it all the time, like on Twitter, and I'm just like, yo, why can't we just watch it and like it for what it is? It's like, yo, if you don't like it, keep it moving. 100%. Like, you know, like, I don't like every TV show that comes on, but I don't, you know, or every movie that comes out or every video game that comes out, but I'm not going to jump on Twitter and start hating on it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to keep it to myself. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm still a movie watcher. I'm still a gamer. I'm still a TV watcher. Like, again, there's different strokes, different folks. That's what I say. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, it's just like, don't demonize certain things and ruin it for other people. That's like essentially like, you know, what I, you know, that's like, no, come on. Because at the end of the day, it's all wrestling. It's just different flavors. Again, it's all ice cream. It's just different flavors. You know? So that's how I've always felt on it, Jay, 100%.
You had mentioned deathmatch wrestling, and I don't know if this was just a rumor years ago, but there was a rumor that Ophidian was going to dabble in deathmatch of some sort. I don't know if it was a Carnage Cup or something, and I thought the names were put out there and then was pulled off the table. Was
that was not a rumor.
Not a rumor, okay.
No. So, yeah, we were going to go down to IWA Deep South. It was Carnage Cup.
Yeah.
Yes. It was so. It was literally the whole allure of the event was Chikara guys were coming down to be in a deathmatch tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ophidian. It was myself, Frightmare, and Chainstorm, and I think Fire Ant.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one more. It was like a group of us getting ready to go down. And when they, like I said, when they released the card, when they released the bracket, when they released that we were coming, again, gangbusters over the internet. The people were just like, wait, what? This is unheard of. This is like, you know, what the heck happened? Like, what is this? Is crazy, but, you know, this is awesome.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, again, other changes happen, you know, card subject to change, you know, and we were unfortunately pulled off of the show. You know, but at the end of the day, it was just one of those, like, you know, when you're a Chikara wrestler, Chikara business comes first. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, it was just one of those you had to handle business, you know. It was business.
So did Chikara pull the plug on that?
It was more so that because I believe it was just like there was another event that was needed to be put in place to push along another storyline.
Okay.
And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that's what Chikara makes his bread off of, the stories, the continuity.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? And the promoter knew it was cool about it. He was like, no, I get it. You know, he wasn't like a jerk about it. He was like, nah, man, I get it. 100%, man, you know? But he was just like, well, hopefully we can do it some other time. You know what I mean? But
mm-hmm.
we never, unfortunately, never got the chance to do it. But no, man, it was cool, man. It was definitely one of those things that, again, the whole wrestling world was a buzz by that event. And the, again, just the allure of having, you know, Chikara guys who, you know, from a family friendly company coming into a non family friendly company doing non family friendly things in a deathmatch tournament.
Sure.
So, yeah.
There's always a buzz for that type of thing too. So I mean, what kept you from ever dabbling that in any shape or form or any company?
You know, I mean, like I've done hardcore matches, you know,
mm-hmm.
But actual just death matches, like, it's just one of those things, like, I just never thought about it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just never really, really thought about it. Would I do it? I don't know. You know, I don't, you know? Because, again, I've never been asked. You know, and
right.
It's one of those things that, like, you know, I when I think about myself and I think about it, you know, I think about Shane Strickland. For the longest
right.
time, Strickland was just, you know, he went from, you know, doing high flying, and then he became, you know, a real, like, really dabbled. He started dabbling in, you know, attacking as catch can, and he started really dabbling in, you know, strong style. And then it wasn't until that Weapons of Mass Destruction match that we saw him and AR, you know, and, you know, AR Fox, you know, in a deathmatch scenario.
Right.
And for that, and you know, it was funny because it was just like, you know, I saw people, man, why is he doing that? He's talented. He's talented. He doesn't need to do garbage wrestling. I go, wait a second. The fact that he's doing these matches does not negate his talent. He's versatile.
Mm-hmm.
He's a hybrid. He can do whatever.
Right.
And I go, those are the type of people that you want to watch. Those are the type of people that's going to gain your attention, because you don't ever know what he's going to do. You never know what, you know, how he's going to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. So again, it's just like, you know, when I was seeing these, you know, these tweets and everything, it's just like, dude, get off your high horse. Stop being so pretentious, and enjoy the fact that a person stepped out of his comfort zone to do something that he never thought he was going to do before.
Yeah.
From day one, becoming a professional wrestler, never thought he was going to do before, and he did it, and he rocked it. The both of them did. And it gave them that much more notoriety in the wrestling world. Let's celebrate that fact.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, being part of Jakara, was it difficult to stand out on the card? Because sometimes, you know, they'd have those trios tournaments. There's like, you know, 60 guys on the card. I mean, it's
sure,
it gets
sure.
crazy. And even like the CZW matches when they were doing like the Jakara showcase matches, there were like 8-man tags. And I mean,
yeah.
to be the guy that gets noticed amongst that, how difficult is that?
You know what? It really, I can't say that it was difficult because we all shined in our own little way. Each of those matches, trios, Atomicos, Cybernetico, whatever the case may be, every character, it was a recipe. And every character was an ingredient. You know, and that's the way I look at it. When you have a good recipe, no ingredient goes unnoticed. You know, you have a bowl of soup. You know, you taste all the, you know, you taste the spices, you taste the broth, you taste the vegetables, you taste the chicken, X, Y, and Z. I'm probably so weird for making that analogy right now, but that was the first thing that came to mind. But, like,
yeah.
every bit stood out in its own, you know, especially if you have, you know, that type of palate for that. Okay, you can notice that everyone stands out on their own in some way, shape, or form. But at the end of the day, one of the things is just kind of like what a lot of us, the mentality that a lot of us had, it was just like, you know what, let's all eat from the plate. And make this match one of the best damn matches the fans have ever seen.
Yeah.
And we, you know, and at the end of the day, we're all going to get our credit for that. So not just one person got singled out, like, oh man, you know, Moss was really good in this match. You know, Finney was really good in this match and in that match, and you know, Fire Air really stood out there. Like, no, it was literally just, man, you know, the Colony and the Assyrian Pullman killed that match.
Mm-hmm.
Bravo to all, you know, all four men involved. That's
yeah.
You know, that was the goal, and
right.
when all four of us or all, you know, six of us at the time when we became a trio, like, got dabs for that, then I was happy, you know, because at the end of the day, we all brought something special to the plate, you know what I mean?
Sure.
To make that experience that much better for the fan base.
Yeah. So now you guys worked so hard to become, you know, very recognizable, identifiable. The Osirian Portal is very well known all over the world, ESPN, everything else. What leads you to move from that gimmick and now more or less start over, like this far into your career, to go, all right, let me get everybody to know me from scratch? Like, how does that even happen?
You know, because you just want to do something different. It's all about one of the things I've always, you know, read and, you know, seeing people talk about is reinvent yourself. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, I was like, man, you know what? I've done this, you know, this character for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Let's try something different. That's literally all it was. Literally, it was just like I woke up and said, you know what? I want to try something different. And that's it. That was literally it. I wanted to try something. And, you know, the amount of feedback I got from, you know, the night of the Western match until the night I even released the very first unmasked picture of myself. I remember my Instagram just went bananas. People were just like, wait, what? Who? Say what? You know, like, it was great, you know. And, you know, even those fans, from then, you know, and it's scary because, again, you know, it's just like, man, you know, it could have went either way. Like, you were a monster for 10 years, so I kind of liked you then, and I don't like what you're doing now. No, like, the fans have been nothing but supportive through this journey. And I feel like, you know, it's given me a new lease on life and professional wrestling because, again, I'm trying something new. And it's given me an opportunity to tap into markets, given me opportunities to tap into fan bases, and it, most importantly, it just reinvigorated my fun to have fun. To have fun.
Yeah.
100%. It's one of those things that was one of the things that Quack always instilled in us. At the end of the day, have fun. You know,
did the gimmick become stale to you where it was less fun after time?
It wasn't the fact of it was less fun or the gimmick became stale. It was just I never wanted to go when, you know, when the opportunity comes, when I finally hang it up, right? I never wanted to sit there and ask myself, well, what if I did this differently? You know, what if I did that differently? Literally, it was just one of those things. I don't even remember sitting down having a conversation with my mother about it. Like, who knows Jack Diddley about professional wrestling? Who knows Jack Diddley about, you know, character development? And, you know, but she was just like, listen, you know, if you feel in your heart that this is something you want to do, you have to do it for yourself. And, you know, and I would have, you know, hours worth of conversation with Strickland about it, you know, because he was another person that I brought it up to. And he was like, dude, like, you know, he was like, I think, he even said, he's like, dude, honestly, dude, I think it's time. I think it's time for you to reinvent yourself. He was like, you know, he was like, you've done it for so long. You felt, he was like, he asked me, he's like, do you feel like you accomplished everything you needed to accomplish in that character? And I said, yes. He was like, it's time to move along. He's like, it's time to do something different. Reinvent yourself. Yeah. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. And that's something that I will always hold him in high regard for, because he was one of the people that gave me the confidence to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, you know what? Like, cause I was on the fence. Like, I want to do it. Nah, I don't know. No, I want to do it. I don't know. Like, what if the fans don't like it? What if, you know, what if I don't get balked? What if I don't, you know, what if I just go stale? Like, no. Like, and it's just like, and then in the back, you know, I had that in the back of my mind. But, you know, on the flip side, it was just like, well, how do you know? How will you ever know if you don't take that leap of faith?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be very challenging because, I mean, you know, if I saw, you know, Amasis on the poster, I'd say, oh, okay, Amasis is on the show. I saw you on a poster last year for CZW, and I asked somebody, who's this guy? Like, what? Why did they put this guy no one knows on the poster? And they're like, oh, that's Amasis. He's got a new gimmick. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's got to be challenging.
And, you know, right, but you know what's funny? So about that, so, like, I even remember just getting the tweets about it. So if it wasn't, because I remember, like, you know, whoever does the Twitter, you know, they were like, hey, man, we hope that, you know, that you weren't upset that we, you know, said that you were the former Amasis. I was like, why would I be upset about that? You see, that match just got that much more buzz. And the match made that much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop and think about it, you know, in professional wrestling, you know, and theoretically, things have to make sense. So it makes sense why, you know, Deshaun Pratt and Joe Gacy had that match at, you know, that it was better than our best. You know, it made sense. And I just remember getting a tweet that, like, a fan from England was just like, yeah, kind of like what you were saying. Like, yo, he was like, I didn't care about this match until I found out Deshaun Pratt was a monster. He was like, this match, that just made this match 10 times more awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of that. And the fans were just, it was funny. You know, I went out there and I got Funky Barrel chance. One guy was just like, just still the Funky Barrel to me, which was cool because they were, even though when CZW fans saw me, you know, they saw me in my other camera. But when I came back, it was almost like a homecoming. And they re-welcomed me with open arms. And we all know, toughest crowd to get over with, 100%. Because they'll tell you like it is, you know. So for the fact, and I was really nervous about that. I was like, yo, again, there's that self-doubt again. Like, yo, what if I go through the cover and they don't give a crap about me?
Right.
But they did. Dude, I walked through the curtain and they were on their feet. You know, Joe and I had a match. I got a please come back chance.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I'm like, wow, you know, mission accomplished, you know?
Yeah.
It was one of those, I can literally go from behind the curtain and go, ah, okay, cool. The hard part's over, you know?
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments that you're, you know, you're grateful for. And, you know, you're grateful for the fact that the toughest crowd in professional wrestling history, let's just call it what it is, they are. That they are literally just that. Not only accepted me for the character change, but they accepted the fact, they welcomed me back, and they liked what I did, loved it enough to want to see me come back.
Yeah,
that means the world to me, 100%.
Yeah,
100%, man.
If you had if you had to pull out like three matches that would showcase, you know, what you can do, or you know, your favorite matches that you would pull out, what would be the top three or the first three you could think of?
Wow, that would have to be really going through the crevices of winning here, I think. My first one that comes to mind was when I, as you know, as me, I had the opportunity to wrestle Jeff Cobb 1-on-1.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. That was a really good, like, that was a great confidence booster for me, having that match. That one, definitely, you know, the Bullet Club and, you know, at KOT. And I think I'm going to have to say the very first match for the champion, Campeones de Parejas, we had against Incoherence of Delirious and Hollow Wicked. Those
right.
are the top three. Those are the top three.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You're a rap fan, because I got a T-shirt of yours that you got the upside down Method Man symbol style going
yep.
on. So who are a couple of your favorite rappers all time?
Oh man, I mean, so now I'm gonna sound like the grizzled old man. You know, I don't want to go as far as to say I don't like any of the new rap. You know,
yeah, well,
but,
I mostly
know,
don't.
For the most part, I mean, let's just keep it honest. Like, not many of us do. You know, so you know, I'm a big Wu Tang fan. You know, I like Biggie, like Nas. Another, like, kind of like a, you know, again, I'm naming like, you know, Wu-Tang, I'm naming, you know, Nas and Biggie. Now I'm going to throw an orthodox one in there. I'm a big fan, I'm a big fan of Aesop Rock.
Okay.
And here's another one that I'm going to throw in there that's a little bit unorthodox is Tech N9ne. Big Tech
okay.
N9ne fan. Yeah.
All right. Those are respectable, you know. Sometimes I ask these questions. Sometimes I get some answers I just don't. I'm still judging Shane Strickland on his Big Sean love, so.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, like, he loves Big Sean. I remember that was a couple times we were on the road together, and like, he expressed his love for, you know, Big Sean.
Yeah.
You know, so like, he's an acquired taste. You know, he's definitely an acquired taste. You know, and it's one of those things like I like some of his music, but when I'm listening to it, I'm like, fam, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we, like, seriously, like, again, being like an old school, like, you know, where's the story? You know,
yeah.
Like, paint the picture for me. Like, I just remember, again, especially in the 90s, like, early 90s, like, even like the 80s, you know, going on, you know, into like the early 90s, like, there were rap songs that you can literally sit and listen to
mm-hmm.
and see it happening.
Yeah.
They're telling a story, you know?
Yeah.
I remember I did one podcast, and we were talking about that, and the one song that came to mind was Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick's Bedtime Story.
Mm-hmm.
I could listen to that every time and still see the story that they're telling, like,
yeah.
play in my head, and I think that was always really cool to me. And it's just like, you know, either tell me a story that I can envision or make me feel something when I hear you talk, when I hear you, you know, say something. You know what I mean? Like, at the point, I don't care about how many cars you got, how many women you have, how much brain you got. Tell me something that I'm going to feel. You know, make me feel something when I hear you mention. You know, if I can't go back and rewind your lyric and go, oh, my God, that was dope. Like, I don't want to hear you.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I don't want to hear you. You know,
that's why when I hear Big Sean, I'm like, man, you got the wrong Sean. My favorite cat is Sean Price. You know,
Sean Price was good.
Critically underrated.
100%, 100%, you know, and, like, and I've heard some really, really good Sean Price stuff. Like, it's funny, like, I listen to Sirius Radio, and Shady 55 plays a lot of Sean Price.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and again, you know, I was just driving, I'm like, yo, like, man, like, he got, like, just like, like, yo, he does not get the credit he deserves. Like, yo, like,
yeah.
This dude's a really good lyricist. You know?
Yeah, his wordplay is crazy. And going back to Helter Skelter, I mean, just classic, classic stuff.
Yes, yes, you know. And even then, you know, again, you know, going ahead and getting love with some of the pioneers, you know, Big Daddy Kane, you know, Special Ed, Public Enemy. Like, I still remember, I still dug for Kicks and Giggles. I still like to go back to, if I can find it, I'm going to send it to you. Like, it was, it came out, like, last year. And Big Daddy Kane was on Slay in the Morning, and he was freestyling.
Yeah,
and it was,
yeah, I think.
And it was amazing.
Yeah, I think I heard
you
that.
You know? It was
dope.
Yeah,
you could definitely
like,
still
was,
rhyme.
Yeah, I was just like, this is what I'm talking about. A pioneer that can still do his thing, even on today's beats, to still kill it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just great. Like, it was dope. I was like, big ups to the legends, man. This is why he's a legend. This is why he's one
yeah.
of the legends.
Yeah. There's not as many cats that are out there really just, like, throwing fire. Like, just, you know, you could just tell, like, the intensity. One of the new cats that I'll give a lot of credit to is Qadir Latif. I
yes.
mean, that dude is intense. You know, that's
yes.
that old 90s flow.
100%, yes. I don't disagree with that at all. Like, I remember when I first heard him, I was like, okay, he's making me feel something, you know?
Yeah.
Who else is out there that's still keeping that,
Papoose.
Yes. Oh, man, I just saw a buddy of mine share something on his timeline. So, he's literally, like, this dude is just an amazing lyricist. And just a lyrical genius. So this
mm-hmm.
dude is standing in front of and this is just like you can tell, like he just wasn't written, he was just on the spot. Like he's somewhere, and there's like a big like poster board of just different like company
with
logos.
The logos, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and
yep.
he's just rapping down the line.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I literally just sit there with my hand over my mouth, like mouth agape, like, yo, is he really doing this?
Yeah.
And like I commented on the post, and my boy was just like, one of my boys was like, yo, man, he's one of the, you know, you can't tell me Papoose isn't one of the best rappers out there. I told him, I was
yeah.
like, dude, I was like, yo, this right here is pretty much like this top, like he set the bar with Alphabetical Slaughter. He set the
oh,
bar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He set the bar. Like, and then he reset the bar when he did it backwards.
Yep.
This right here,
yeah.
what he was doing, that just changed the game 100%. Like,
yeah.
I was just like, wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. Like, that's what I need to see. That's what I want to see from a lot of today's hip-hop artists.
Yeah.
Again,
he went on a couple-year streak just dropping, like, every 3 months on K-Slay mixtapes. Just, like, he
yeah.
was putting out his own mixtapes, like, every 3 months. It was crazy.
And that was it. And every one was a banger. Every single
oh, yeah.
one, every time he did that, it was hot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to sound like the old grizzle old head, you know, when it comes to hip hop, but it's just like, this is what I want to see from today's artists.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I want to see.
Cassidy's
like,
another one.
Yes. Well, yes. Cassidy, you know, Dipset, you know, my favorite. And it's funny because even then, I remember like back in the day when I was like, you know, when Dipset was just like, it was like the early 2000s, they had the rap game on lock, Dipset. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of my friends were like, yo, like, who's your favorite? You know, a lot of people were like, nah, man, like Ken. You know, like Hell Rel. I like Joel Santana. And they were like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Him? Like, why? I'm like, that's just something about him. Again, when he raps, I listen. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, that's just what it was. Like, I mean, like, the beats on the track, I listen. Like, I stop and I just listen. You know, Lil Wayne, a lot of people like, well, since it's like, ah, man, he fell off. But I don't think so. I don't think he fell off. Like, you know, I think he still got it. If anything, again, circling back to, you know, earlier on in our conversation, reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
He's done that so many times. Like, I remember when he came out with that rock album, and people were just like, wait, what? Like, that's, like, again, stepping out of your comfort zone to doing something different. Again, some people liked it. Some people didn't.
Yeah.
You know? In fact, a lot of people didn't. But he still sold records. And it was still good music.
Yeah. The thing about Lil Wayne is a lot of times people judge him and everything, but, I mean, if you look at some of the stuff he did, he kind of invented mumble rap, but he was a dude that could rap when he wanted to. So he would kind of put it on cruise control, do a little mumble rap, and then he'd snap off on a verse, you know what I mean? But there's some cats now that can't do the other part.
No, right. You know what? Yes, that's exactly, that's funny you say that, because it's just like, yeah, I didn't even, wow, you actually just blew my mind with that statement, because I didn't even think of that right there. You know what I mean? And you're exactly right. But it was just like you said, you know, he could have gotten away with it. He was the only one that was able to get away with it, because, like you said, yeah, but like, just like you said, you know, he's like, I'm going to take a step back, you know, but then when it's time to go in, I'm going to be a monster.
Right.
You know, like, I'm a monster. I'm going to be a monster on this track. Like, I'm going to rip it. And that was literally it, you know. You know, like, I just, like, my favorite. Like, I mean, I liked all his stuff, you know. You know, I didn't really care for a lot of his Cash Money stuff, because I felt like he was overshadowed a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
During Cash Money, you know what I mean? I
did. Yeah.
You know, I guess it was because, like, he was the youngest one. You know, they were probably, you know, young boy, and I'm like, ah, you know, what you know about this rap game, you young blood. And then it was just like when he stepped out on his own, you know, he started with the Carter and everything like that. That's when you really start to see, like, yo, this dude have bars. And I feel like if they allowed him to be put to the forefront, I feel like, you know, Cash Money would have been bigger than what they were. You know what I mean? I felt like he would have definitely, at that time, at his young age, would have been able to go ahead and carry Cash Money, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, Birdman wants respect on his name. He's not trying to...
Well, right, exactly. You know, he was trying to, you know, silence the dude. And I feel like when you really stop and think about it, again, you know, he came out with the Carter and everything like that. Like, it was almost like it was purposely done. Like, like, we go, you know, you can have a verse or two, but, you know... You know, we gonna get ours first. You know what I mean? We gonna beat the track up. You gonna get scraps. At least that's kind of how I felt. You know, and like to this day, like my favorite song of his, like when he stepped out on his own, is definitely 6 foot 7 foot. Like that's when you really can really feel. At least to me, in my own personal opinion, you know, I'm sure there's people that's gonna listen to this that are gonna disagree with me, but I really felt like. In that song, that's when you can really see and hear and feel his lyrical genius. In that song.
Yeah. Yeah, he's versatile. And the, I mean, this recent album is a good example of, like, how versatile he is and how many different types of styles he could do. And, you know, from storytelling to just bars to, like, the dance track to, I mean, he just kind of hit all angles on this one.
Oh, man, what was another one that, oh, man, I remember it was the one song that every road trip Ophidian and I will always listen to. Oh, man, what was it? He was basically, again, storytelling. He's a doctor in the ER. And basically what he's trying to save is hip-hop. Like, hip-hop is lying on the gurney dying.
And yeah.
I can't forget that. You know the song I'm talking about, right?
I think so. I want to say Carter 3, but it could be wrong.
That's what I think it was on, And I think it was called Dr. Carter.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Well, yeah. There you go. Right. Go figure. I think it was called Dr. Carter, yeah. And, like, that was it. Like, the story that he was telling, like, hip-hop comes in is dying. Hip-hop is dying. And he's the doctor to save it, you know? Like, it was awesome. Like, I was just like, yeah, that was just amazing, you know. And who was I talking to? I was even with, you know, one of his more popular songs, he gets a lot of radio play, Uproar. You know, like, so funny thing about it, because I guess it is, because, like, you know, Wayne took that little time off from music, right?
Yeah.
So for the longest, you know, the funny thing, I did not know that was him for the longest, because it was like I hadn't heard him, and then like I hear him, and I'm like, yo, who is this? He didn't even sound like Wayne to me, you know. But I'm like, but he's using one of my favorite beats, so special to G-Dep, Special Delivery. I'm like, I love that beat. That was like one of my favorite, you know, hip hop beats, you know, 2000s. So I was like, yeah, of course, naturally, I'm gonna love this song. And then when I found, you know, out, I was like, it was Wayne that did it. I was like, yo, I love this song even more. Like, you know, again, you took a class. And it's funny because it's just like, man, to stop and think that Special Delivery's beat is a classic beat nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, man, I was probably out of high school when that song came out. Like now,
yeah,
like, man, it's a classic. It's now considered a classic beat now. Oh, times have changed, man. Times
yeah, it's crazy.
Right on, man.
But yeah, back to wrestling real quick. You know, what are some of the goals? What do you got left? You got some dream matches. What are you looking to accomplish at this point?
I mean, yeah, man. I have a plethora of dream matches, man. But I'm gonna give you my top three.
Okay.
My top three dream matches definitely would be me and Shane Strickland 1-on-1.
Okay.
I'd like to test my mettle against Kenny Omega. I feel like that would be a match that I feel like that would be something that I know I could rip. You know, someone would give you the opportunity, or I'd be blessed with the opportunity. I don't know if it gives you the opportunity. I'm blessed with the opportunity to do that. That would be something I would be able to just rip. And, man. You know, I mean, just keeping it in the elite AEW family, I would like to go 1-on-1 with Cody Rhodes. You know, that's another match that, like, again, you know, you test your merit, you test your mettle, you test your confidence. Those would be my top three matches, because I feel like if I can go out there and kill it with all three of those dudes, like, you're truly undeniable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no way that people's eyes are not going to be on Deshaun Pratt, because it's like, man, like, and people are going to be like, you know, it's going to be to the point where I like having those three matches, it's no longer going to be, oh man, you know, he used to be a monster on your senior portal. Nah, bump that. Nah, he's the dude that killed it with Shane Strickland. He's the dude that had that classic with Kenny Omega. He's the dude that killed it with Cody Rhodes. You know what I mean? Again, reinvent myself.
Yeah.
And as far as future goals, I mean, yeah, I'd love to get back over to England. Like, that's my thing. Like, the England scene has been, you know, skyrocketing since, like, 2 years ago. And it's just, like, I want back in, you know? Like, I really want to get back over there. And, yeah, man, Impact Wrestling. That's my – I feel like, you know, I would feel at home at Impact Wrestling, you know, watching a lot of their guys and watching a lot of that roster. I'm like, man, like, it's funny, you know, I'll sit there and I'll watch and I'm just like, yeah, he and I would be a good match. You know, it's funny, kind of just like, yeah, you know, that would be, he and I would be a good match. Yeah, I can turn it to him too. You know what I mean? So like, there's a lot of like dudes on that roster that I would be able to kill it with, you know? So that's the goal, man. Like, you know, those three dudes of Strickland, Rhodes and Omega, and you know, being able to be seen on Impact TV one day. So that's the hustle, man. That's the goal, man.
Yeah, that's good shit. So yeah, man, I think that's about all I got. We covered a lot. Is there any plugs, anything you want to put out there, upcoming dates?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can, you know, follow me on Twitter, at Prince of CMD. You can follow me on Instagram, Prince of CMD _ Deshaun Pratt. Yeah, I mean, on upcoming dates, I have next week in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, PPW of Pennsylvania Premier Wrestling. It's first time ever matchup between me and Mecha Wolf 1-on-1. So
okay.
I personally dubbed that match the Battle of the 450 Splashers. So it's going to be fun. You know, I always tell people,
nice.
You know, they're like, I can't wait for that match. I just say, don't blink, man. You're going to miss a lot. Thankfully, PPW has high ceilings because we're going to go in. We're going to kill it. So that match is going to be dope.
What is CMD?
Camden.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, it's short for Camden. Yep. You know, that's where, you know, it's funny. A lot of people don't. When they said it, I was like, wait, why are you, you know, why are you the Prince of Camden? I'm like, that's where I'm from. But yeah. You're like, Camden, New Jersey? I'm like, yeah, born and raised. You know, so it's one of those things. It's just kind of like, and you know, and a lot of people ask me, like, why do you do that? Why did you pick that? I go, because, you know why? Because, you know, that's my home. You know, I don't ever shy away from that. I will scream that from the highest mountain. That's where I'm from. You know, a lot of people will leave the city and kind of just, no, I'm not from there. No, I'm not from there. No, like, that's my home, you know. And, you know, I'm proud of that. You know, I'm proud of the fact that, you know, a four-year-old, you know, little boy from Camden, you know, again, high crime, high death rate, you know, super poverty-stricken city, you know, I came from that and being able to, again, to travel the world, you know, go to places that I've only read about in textbooks, you know, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, so it you know, it's one of those things where, you know, paying homage to where I'm from and just never forgetting my roots, you know, and again, being able to one day, you know, grace the TV screen on Impact Wrestling, even WWE, who knows? Like, you know, that's the one thing I'll tell them, like, look, don't change that. You know, that's one thing I won't allow you guys to change. Like, put that to the forefront. Because I want that little boy or little girl to be like, yo, he's from our city. He's from here. You know, he walked past the same drug dealers as I do going to school. He graduated from the same high school that, you know, I went to.
Yeah.
If he can do it, I can do it. That's literally it, man. That's the reason why I did that. That's the reason why I picked that.
It's understandable.
So, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. So, I think we covered everything, right?
We did. And then some.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yeah, man. So I really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, it's a long time coming. So
yes, sir.
Yeah, man. I definitely want to have you back on in the future. Just go out there and keep killing it.
Man. Thank you, man. Thank you.
All right, man. So I think that's about it. We got all the plugs out there. So have a good night, man.
You too, man. Thank you for having me on, buddy.
Anytime.
Peace.
So there you go. There's Deshaun Pratt. I had a lot of fun talking to him. So tomorrow night, not tomorrow night, probably Saturday night, I'm going to do another show where I just talk a bunch of shit, do my normal deal, cover a bunch of topics. In the meantime, go check out, I Got Your 5 Stars with Jeremy. Check out the Hot Tag Podcast. Hostile City Graphics, Powerbomb Prince over there, Jonathan Stauffer doing his thing. And I think that's about all I got for tonight. And like I said, I'll probably touch base with you guys on Saturday night. I got some shit to talk, man. So don't get it fucked up. You know, we're doing these interviews. We're having a good time talking to some people. And I'm enjoying that, but obviously I have opinions on some other things that I will most definitely get into. I'm thinking Saturday. So check y'all motherfuckers later. Peace.
Talk to y'all later. Have a nice night. Stay dry. It's raining again. I'm tired of rain. Makes my grass green. I won't complain about that. That's all I gotta say. I'm out of here.
I love all of y'all and, shit.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes.
You been in the gym, bro.
You know why?
DJ Hyde, fuck you.
You don't have the guts to be what you wanna be. You need people like me.
I'll listen to your podcast and I'll find everything out. You know what I mean?
You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what I make you? Good?
Black Cheese tells me all the time to listen to what you gotta say, because you be blazing people, and I'm like, well, I gotta hear it now.
You just know how to hide. A lot. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell a truth. Even when I lie.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Jesus!
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
I'm gonna tell you something straight off the motherfucking press. I ain't coming for no fools.